Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Okay, Srila Baladeva, okay, this is 26. Markings are the same.
Same.
Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana paraphrases this opinion, means the Mayavada opinion, in technical language. Endowed with vidya, Brahman becomes Ishwara Chaitanya. And endowed with avidya, Brahman becomes Jiva Chaitanya through differentiation of cause and effect. A relationship caused by indescribable ignorance, ajnana, which functions as vidya and avidya. So, ignorance becomes knowledge and not knowledge, right? And so, this somehow or another, it says, Brahman becomes endowed with, right? That's the problem. What was the thing they said before? Unexplainable or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it means impossible to explain. In other words, their philosophies run out.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of one's sarup, states of Ishwara and Jiva cease to exist. The interesting thing is that knowledge creates these, creates the Jiva,
yeah.
And lack of it, I mean, creates the Jiva and the Ishwara, which are both aspects of ajnana,
yes.
Right? Ignorance.
Yes.
And then somehow or another, by the higher state of this ignorance, you will get rid of the ignorance,
yes.
And then you will become again Brahman. Makes sense, right? So that's the fun part, is that so therefore it has to be inexplicable because they can't explain it. It really just doesn't. Yeah. Only the one state of mere consciousness without qualities exists. This is Kaning Shankara's view. That is presented in this Anucheda. The meaning is clear. According to Mayavad doctrine, the difference between Ishwara and Jiva is not eternal or intrinsic. It is due only to upadis, or the apparent limitations of Brahman by the vidya and avidya potencies. God, being a product of vidya, always thinks and acts perfectly, even though he is ultimately unreal. You know, but so then why, if nothing's real, why would you worry about good and bad? I mean, how do you define that? Why, it means, what's the problem in being, you know, existing or not existing? It doesn't matter, or something good or not, if it's all illusion. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's like saying this part of the mirage is good and that part's not very good.
Yes.
And you know, it just doesn't have any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
That's the fun part. So there is a standard. There is Satchitananda. There is these things. So intrinsically, the soul still acts in that way. Though he comes up with this philosophy that seemingly says that all that doesn't exist. Right? But the interesting thing is they still have to act according to this. Just like the materialist. Right? The karmi, he still acts according to you have an eternal relationship. You know, you will be secure. You will be eternally happy. And whatever, and you can do activities that will generate that happiness. So that's again sambandhavidaya prayojan, right?
Yes.
So they're still functioning that way. So the Mayavadi also functions that way. That there is a state of bliss.
Yes.
That there is knowledge and a situation in which you can therefore experience. You know, you can be, how you say, in a position to experience that, and then by an endeavor. So in this case, gaining the proper knowledge. then you can experience that bliss. So it's again sambandha vidaya and prayojana. But they will say that there is only sat.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise, if undifferentiated Brahman with no qualities, right?
Yes.
Only the one state of mere consciousness without qualities exists. There's only consciousness. If there's no quality, Ananda is a quality.
Yes.
You know, so why would just consciousness, but conscious of what? You know, it means just what is that? It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Right? But they think I'll be happy. But the point is if it's only mere consciousness without qualities, there can't be happiness.
Yes.
So it's against their philosophy.
Yes.
Right?
Can we say that there is some satisfaction because it is consciousness?
No, but satisfaction is still a quality. See, as soon as there's any element of the... Because what is appreciating that? Where is satisfaction appreciated or happiness appreciated? It's not in the consciousness. It's in the mind.
Mm. Yes.
Yes. But the point is there is no mind, there's only consciousness. So technically you wouldn't be able to understand that you're happy because you're just conscious of what's there. There's no interaction, there's nothing to interact with.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So their whole premise doesn't have a basis. That's the difficulty. Yes.
What if someone says that our philosophy runs out, let's say, at where the jiva falls down? Because we say just somehow or other. Well, then our philosophy...
Because the point is somehow or another, because it's just the jiva, we can explain, the jivas become envious. But why one becomes envious and one doesn't? They're individuals.
Yeah.
So the point is as individuals, then they do like this. So it's not a matter of running out. It's just that it's just a pleasant way of saying that, you know, it just happens rather than saying anybody who's here listening to what we're talking about is a rat bag because, you know, you got envious and you left and you're here. You know, so therefore we say somehow or another. It sounds better, right? It makes you feel...
You put it that way.
You know, you can maintain your dignity. So, is that okay?
Yes.
We'll leave it at that. Yes.
Good.
That's the thing in Vedanta. There is no dogma. There's nothing that can't be discussed. Like that. Okay. But the jivas constitutionally mired in avidya cannot be perfect as long as they continue to exist separately. Right. But Vishnu is you know, in their idea, God is perfect, even though he's unreal. But the jivas, because they're created from avidya, they cannot be as perfect as long as they continue to exist separately. But somehow or another, Vishnu can be perfect separately, though illusory. But the jivas can't until they give up their separate existence. So then even there's a difference between, you know, the unreal God and the unreal jiva. You know? So it's yeah. So that means what we see is they always create duality, though their intention is to create a oneness. They can, however, with the help of vidya, remove their upadis. Right? It didn't seem to work for God, but somehow or another it's going to work for you, right? You know, like that. Brahman with vidya becomes God, right? But somehow or another the jivas with vidya are going to become Brahman. Makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah, so that's just, these are... Yeah. Okay. They can become liberated from avidya and realize their oneness with the non-variegated supreme. In support of this concept, the Shankaras quote the Vedic statements, Rite jnanan na muktihi. There is no liberation without knowledge. Yeah, we'll say that also. But why does it mean that it's this kind of knowledge? Or why does it mean the jiva doesn't exist? Right? But the point is knowledge is an aspect of avidya, of jnana anyway. Right? So then why the specialness here?
Yeah.
You know, that's the difficulty. So it's not that these things aren't there. You say this, you make up a speculative philosophy, then you quote these things, but it doesn't mean that. It just means that liberation is not going to come without knowledge. If you don't know you're the soul, how you get liberated?
Yes.
Like that. So here they're saying, when you know you're not the soul, you'll be liberated. We're saying, no, when you know you are soul.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Baladev refutes this view as follows. Simultaneously, suddenly, by combination with ignorance, one part of Brahman gives shelter to avidya, and another part is defeated by avidya. By what fault has Brahman become subject to various disturbances and experiences of suffering? It is impossible to explain how Brahman develops a relationship with ignorance. Thus, the categories described by Shankara are not accepted. We accept what is seen by Vyas. Right? So it's very simple. In that sense, because Brahman has no qualities, therefore there can be no fault. So how could it become covered by ignorance? To become the jivas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? It's not possible. Srila Vyasadeva saw in trance that Maya is subordinate to the Supreme. She cannot even stand in the presence of the Supreme, what to speak of making him the object of her control by transforming him into the whole world of illusion. Right? So this is where it comes in, because he sees both. But it's not that Brahman has become transformed, it's that Brahman stands on his own. Right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't become affected by her. Mm-hmm. And the jivas are there eternally also. Vyasadeva also saw the jiva as an entity in its own right, both before the imposition of illusion and after liberation and love of God. So that remains. In the next Anucheda, Jiva Goswami Pad states that the difference between the jiva and the Lord is real and not just empirical. Summary of text 36. Here Jiva Goswami explains how the jiva is not an upadi. He also introduces the twin Mayavad theories of Parichedavad, theory of division, and Pratibimbavad, theory of reflection. Because right? They have to have all these things to try to work out how this has happened, how the impossible can, the unexplainable can happen.
It's right? Like they're always running. They're always going somewhere because it never actually comes to a conclusion.
No, but I'm saying when you get, you see, but the thing is, the problems in one are solved in the other.
Yeah.
You know? But it doesn't mean the other one, its problems are solved in this one.
Yeah.
So you just keep moving back and forth.
Exactly.
Like that. You know, that's all. Just, you know, it's like in political parties, you have the right wing and the left wing. So what are the problems in the left wing are solved in the right, but the problems in the right are solved in the left. So people would go with left for a while until they get sick of the problems, then they'll take the right, and that'll solve those problems, and then the other problems will come up, and then they'll switch to the left. It's just a matter of time. You watch, every country does that. It's just a matter of what time the conservatives are in power and what time the liberals are in power. So they've always been there. You know. Because we said, this liberal attitude goes way back. So, I mean, these two political parties have been there since the late 1700s in America. So it's not that liberal is a new thing or conservative is a new thing. You know, they've always been different. You know, like the dress code before Queen Victoria at the end of the 1800s, that was very liberal, you know. Even in formal situations, if women weren't very well dressed on the top part of their body, it didn't matter. The lower part was covered, but the upper part didn't matter. But with Victoria, it was like, you know, head to toe, you know, covered. You know, your nose sticks out. That's bad. You know, like that. That's late 1800s. That's, you know, 120 years ago or more. You know, and then the liberal comes again, and then it goes back. It's always doing that. So that's the thing, is that they're working in duality, though they think they're transcendental. Right? We'll call them transcendentalists because their interest is in Brahman. You know, just like a Brahmin is interested in Brahman, therefore he's a Brahmin. But actually understanding what is Brahman and Krishna and his relationship, that is not necessarily. That then is the next stage. That's the Vaishnava. Right. So here you're dealing with dvipras. You know, they have knowledge, but they don't know the Lord. Okay.
What is the meaning of upadi here? Jiva is not an upadi.
Upadi, because it's a upadi. What we say was, what was this definition? It was that
a limiting
adjunct. What is an adjunct?
It's something that's external to the actual essence of that being. That's like an imposing quality that doesn't belong to the religion.
Oh, okay. It means like kids when they go out and do the car up or stuff.
Pimp my ride.
Basically. Just have nothing to do with it. Okay. So then you're adding something that doesn't belong to, so the jiva, that element of individuality, is therefore a limiting adjunct that you've added to Brahman. You know, or the nicer one than Ishwara, you know, is that, you know, because of knowledge and everything's perfect, but it's still an upadhi. That's their idea.
Is it the same than the false designation?
Yes, false designation. It's the same thing. Just that's the thing. But so the real upadhi is the body. Right? See, is that they're taking that we have the body, and that the problem is that it's the soul. You get rid of the soul, then you don't have any problem. Right? That's the Buddhist conception. Right? So the Maya bodies are the same. Just they use, you know, Vedic quotes to back up their stuff. So but it's simple. The body is the upadhi. Right? The body, the subtle body, that's the upadhi. I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's the upadhi. Because the Maya bodies aren't about to give up that.
Yes.
Because they're controller, I become Brahman, right? And I'm the enjoyer, I will enjoy Brahmananda.
Yes.
So there's no question. So the real upadhi, the original upadhi, right? You know, it's like that. You know? The original upadhi, right? Then that one, they won't give up. So they never actually come to the permanent transcendental platform. They're temporarily liberated, but not. It's like throwing a ball up in the air. You know, it flies for a while and then comes back down. You know, so does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, text 36. Nor is the difference between the supreme and the jiva based merely on hierarchy of imaginary features, upadhis. It's not that the supreme and the jiva, one has the upadhi of vidya, and the other has the upadhi of avidya. Therefore you get the two. Right? Produced by division, reflection, or some other process. So this is the thing. What was it? Paticheda is division, and Pratibimba is reflection. Shankaracharya quite reasonably founded this philosophy on the assumption that reality is unified. Right. So the original unified principle. Yes. Therefore, they all are atheists. Right. But not how, in the first place, can Ajnana produce from Brahman the appearance of God and the jivas? This the Mayavadi had to show. Two major attempts at solving this riddle were the theories of Paticheda and Pratibimba. Shankara first suggested both these theories in his commentaries in Vedanta Sutras and the Upanishads. Later, these theories were elaborated by his followers. Those various opinions eventually solidified into differing Mayavadi schools. So he throws this out just to keep them busy, right? Because they'll have doubts, and then when they have doubts, then here's ideas they get, and then they can go, and then they just go farther and farther and make their own schools and fight with each other and, you know, keep themselves busy, right? Does that make sense? You know, just like kids. You know, if they have nothing to do, they make more trouble, right? So here, they keep them busy, they have something to do. They sit in their ashrams, argue, you know, stuff like that.
We can get on with it. We can get on with it.
Yes, like that. So Paticheda-vad. So this is, what do you call it? Division. Vachaspati-misra, a prominent commentator of the 9th century, developed the Paticheda-vad. So that's 9th century. When was Shankara?
Yeah.
How long back was Shankara?
Yeah, he's
like 6th, 7th
century.
Okay, so 200-300 years later. Okay. Developed the Paticheda-vad. Paticheda means delimiting. A water pot shape, for example, sets off or delimits a small part of the atmosphere. In terms of this theory, the original Ajnana separates itself into a multitude of individual units of consciousness, each delimiting a specific portion of the infinite supreme. In other words, each separate consciousness, in effect, creates its own universe, along with an imagined God. Oh, so you even get your own God along with it. Wow, cool. Okay, nice. I was just looking like a good theory here. You get your own God along with it. Yeah. Now, wait, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Let's see what Pratibimba offers. We'll give a God and we're going to throw in, you know.
Cadillac.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have Cadillacs. Okay. In other words, each separate consciousness, in effect, creates its own universe along with an imagined God. Baladev cites the Shruti evidence, supposedly, in support of this. The Brahman divides into Ishwar and Jiva by division of the one Brahman through Maya, according to Shruti. Yad tu indro mayabhi puru rupa iyate. Brahman appears as many by his Maya. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2:5:19. But it doesn't necessarily mean that this is about the jivas, right? Mm-hmm. It couldn't be about anything. It can just be about all the forms that are there. And in any case, even you say, if you're going to identify a living entity, how do you identify them? Mm-hmm. Everyone's seeing the soul, you know, and by the particular, you know, light combination, you know, then you can tell, you know, oh, this one's a little brighter, this must be my brother, and this one's a little bit duller, that must be, you know, that little sister, you know, stuff like that. No, you can see the body. So the point is that body, therefore, the many is created by the Lord's Maya.
Yes.
Another explanation that's given later, some pages later, is that Maya doesn't necessarily mean illusion. It also means all the Lord's created internal energies, all the Shaktis.
Okay. So, it's like Mayapur. Yeah. It means the internal parts. Well, that would be our explanation. Yeah. But even in here, using that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has anything to do with the jivas. See, that's the trick that Shankar has done. He's bewildering them. He quotes these things and then says, and then they automatically take it that it means the soul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Divided by vidya, a huge portion, Ishwara, appears. Divided by avidya, a small portion, the jiva appears. This is similar to the sky being contained by a large pot and a small cup. Each jiva and its Ishwar are real only because they are actually the supreme. Their separate limited existence is unreal. So now they're actually saying that, you know, means their existence separate is real, but unreal, but they exist.
Yes.
But it's not, but as separate parts, just like the sky. It's still all the sky, but some's in a small pot, some's in a big pot, but it's still all sky. So that it's actually separate from the sky, that's their concept of illusion. Right? Mm-hmm. But the sky is Brahman, that's real. Right. So the difficulty, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So this is, you know, we've heard about the pot, so this is the... Paricheta means delimiting. So that means you're trying to delimit by reversing the process. So they're describing how you get out of this, or you're describing about how they got into this? Because it says delimiting.
Well, it's both. It's by breaking the pot that you get out. But they don't elaborate on how Brahman got into the pot.
How they got into the pot, yeah. How do you take all that big Brahman and stuff it into the pot or something? Yes.
Is this the same philosophy that is also known as the transformation theory, or that Brahman transforms?
I'm not sure that you don't end up with actually two aspects on a superior level and two aspects on a secondary level.
Okay.
And then between those four, they can keep themselves,
they've
kept themselves busy now for the last, 11 centuries, right?
Yeah.
So then, because the one is how you get Maya in the first place.
Yes.
You know, so how does this creation happen? Is it Brahman's, you know, means it transforms.
Mm.
But then if it transforms, if it's Brahma Parinam, then the problem comes is then Brahman is not, it loses its quality of low quality, right? So then that becomes a problem. And I think then to exchange, to, other than they come up with these. But is there some connection between these two and the Brahma Parinama Bhava?
We're going to deal with it later. They call it the Eka Jiva Vad as well.
Eka Jiva Vad.
Yeah.
Oh, the one living entity. Yeah. So whichever one of us is the living entity, when we wake up, everybody else disappears.
Yeah.
That would make a good movie.
Parinama is separate from the living entity.
Parinama is separate. Yeah, it's separate, but it's dealing with a different level.
Yeah.
This is just explaining how you get Ishwara and Jiva.
Yes.
Like that. And then the other is explaining, I think, how the whole energy thing works. Because this doesn't explain where Maya came from, how it works. That's. Okay, Pratibimbavad. The Pratibimbavad, or reflection theory, was worked out by Prakashatma in the 12th century. Baladev Vidyabhushana provides this doctrine's foundational verse. So that means they were working basically with the Parichedavad for 6 centuries. Right? So it kept them busy for a while. And then they had a problem, so now they, Okay. Just as the one light of the sun divided by water becomes many, the unborn Atma is made into many forms by upadis in various bodies. Right? So that's the reflection in the water pots.
Yeah.
Right? So somehow it's always about a pot.
Yes.
Now the difference is it air or is it water? Right? So it could have been one that had a stronger vata constitution, the other had more of a kapha constitution. So therefore, the division of Ishwar and Jiva is said to take place by a reflection of Brahman, as described above. The reflection in Vidya is Ishwara. The reflection in a Vidya. Just a small Vidya. Not a whole lot of Vidya there. No. So in other words, Ishwara is in a lot of Vidya, and the Jiva is in just only one single Vidya. Is the Jiva.
Planck unit.
Yeah, Planck unit. Yeah. This is similar to a reflection of the sun in a lake and in a pot. Right? So in the lake, that's the big, that's the Ishwara, and in the pot, then that'll be the Jiva. But the fun part is, if you put the pot and the lake next to each other, the sun will look the same size. So that seems to be left out of the explanation. But, you know what I'm saying? Because people want, how is that? Because they want to be cheated in the first place, because they want to be God. So then if you say, oh, you can be God like this, just like the person wants to be cheated, he wants to be rich fast. Can you get rich fast? In reality, no. But by the work you put in, that's what you'll get back. Right? So if someone does get rich fast, that means he's done the work previously. Right? So therefore, you tell the person, oh, you just buy a lottery ticket, then you can get rich fast. Right? And so then, like that, they believe it because they want to be cheated. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the Mayavadis want to be cheated. So even though they're so intelligent, you give them these little things, and then it's, oh, okay, I had a doubt whether I'm actually God. No, don't worry, It's like that, about the air in the pot. No, feel the water in the pot. Then you look in the pot, and then you see the sun, right? But is it actually the sun? No, so see, you're God. it's like that. No, it's just, what has it got to do with it? It's a reflection. What do you mean? It's just, what does the sun in that pot have to do with it? But whatever keeps them happy. In this view of Brahman's reflection in Ajnana as God, who again is reflected in individual consciousness as the finite souls, this process is envisioned as reflection to express the sameness of the original and its images. Okay. Ishwara and the Jivas are real because they are nothing but Brahman. The appearance of their being different is unreal. So again, it's the same thing. So they're saying about how their realness is that they're Brahman, but their separateness, their individual identity. Now here also it says, you get the idea, is that it's reflected first on Brahman, as you get Ishwara, and then that's again reflected, and then you get Jivas. Right? So somehow or another they give more of an explanation of the two, right? That, rather than a bigger pot and a smaller pot.
Last year we made the joke that they're both potheads.
Both potheads, yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of Shiva's people, they are. Maybe that's the whole thing, is that, you know. You can tell this stuff to them, you know. Okay, Vivartavad. Yes.
So this indicates that Vaishnava or Mayavadis start by Ishvara. So they don't have the same definition.
Yeah, no, it's all the same. The Jiva, the Ishvara, like that. Is that, see, your process of getting, by through knowledge, freeing yourself from the external upadis is the same for the impersonalist and for the Vaishnava.
Yes.
Because that part is the same. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to the point where you've given up those upadis, then you're the Vaishnava is then is, how you say, continues in his position as servant of the Lord. But the Mayavadis then try to give up their that concept of their individuality.
Yes.
You understand? But otherwise the sadhana to free yourself from material attachments the same. But for them it's great trouble because they're trying to do it by their own power, their own qualities. While the Vaishnav, then by the surrender to the Lord, by the Lord's grace, then they're able to cross. Yes. Right? So that's why it's so much trouble for the Mayavadis. So to be a very good Mayavadi, they actually have to be extremely pious like that. You know, so that's why I only hear of these few great personalities like that. There's a lot more great personalities in the Vaishnava community. In the Mayavad community, there's not that many. Because, you know, I mean, because everybody, you know, everybody liked to be God, right? You know, so it's, but that's not enough, you know, to be outstanding. You know? Because it's material, so they have to work on their own karma. Right, so how many have that kind of brains? How many kind of have, you know? So that's what you're seeing. One philosophy comes up in the 9th century. One comes up in the 12th, right? You know, 600 years later. And that second one is 300 years after our Shankara, right? So then it's, you know, so then I guess we can expect the next one in the 24th. Yeah, no, because you have 3, then 6. No, 3, 6. No, then you'd have 12, right? So then the 18th. 18th?
Yeah, no,
15.
Because 6th century plus
12, 18. Oh, okay. No, but the 12th century is 6. No, but that was already 3 to 12. No, 6 to 12 is 6. No, but then it has to double again. So it's 12 and 12 is 24. Yeah, so another 400 years, and you can expect another school of thought to come up.
Maybe the Ritwicks will come up with something.
Well, maybe. Could be. Always try. Vivartavad. By using the... Now, this Vivarta... This is also a Mayavad theory.
Yeah, so actually, upon thinking about it, I think this Pratibimba and Paricheda both belong to the umbrella term of Parinamabad, and then this is another
Brahma Parinamabad.
Yeah, Brahma Parinamabad.
Okay, and then there's Vibhartabad.
Yeah, because I guess they're claiming that Brahman is transforming through reflection or through division.
Okay, and then Vibharta has another idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
They deny that there's any reality.
Okay. Vivartavad, by using the word Adi and so on, Sri Jiva Goswami implies that there are other Mayavad theories on the origin of Ishvara and Jiva. The most influential of these is the Vivartavad, the illusion, the theory of illusion. Yes. I thought it said the Ori of illusion. So what's an Ori? Okay. Outlined by Shankara. Right? You don't have an Ori there?
Yeah, okay.
Outlined by Shankara and expounded by his disciple Sureshwara, Vivartavad posits that God and the finite souls are totally unreal, nothing more than a delusion. Okay. Okay, because the other ones are saying they're real, but not as individual identities. But here it's just saying the whole thing's on zero.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's
basically, they're saying in the previous one that the upadis are fake because they're part of agyana.
Okay.
Whereas we say that the upadis are real. Is that the fact you think you're a person, or you think you have these qualities, or you're this varna? Those are real things that exist in the spiritual world.
Okay.
But here, they're just, you know, in position, they're false.
Yeah, but there, but the means the upadi itself exists in its own right, but it's, the soul is not.
Yeah, it's like a water in the mirage.
Okay, so then, and then this vivarta, there's no more explanation given.
That's it.
Okay, problems common to all Mayavadi theories. However,
I like the way that Vivartavad takes up four lines and then the problems. Takes up.
However, the Ishwara and Jiva originate, they manifest themselves, the Mayavadis say, in a variety of forms, ordered in a hierarchy from subtle to gross. In other words, there are different degrees of unreality, in which the Creator, God, is less unreal than His creation. And the public reality of day-to-day life less unreal than the sleeping person's dreams. Right? So as you go. So in other words, the Creator is unreal, but less unreal than the creation. And that's less unreal than the particular individuals who are awake and performing. And they're less unreal than when they're asleep.
Yes.
What do you mean less unreal?
Less unreal?
More unreal, it's not a depression?
Well, that would be going the other way. It means you can say is that the dreaming state of the individual is more unreal than the individual, and they're more unreal than the, you know, overall, you know, the creation, and that's more unreal than Ishwara, which is unreal, and then there's Brahman, which is real.
Yeah.
Sounds really
good. Well, one's an illusion, the other is an illusion within an illusion.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we have that also. It's like the, what do you call it? When we say perverted reflection, that means it's exactly the same culture and value, basic, you know, cultural value system as the spiritual world. But the perversion is we make ourselves the center instead of Krishna. Now, when you give up that natural culture of the spiritual world and start to create your own, then it becomes perverted of the perverted.
Yeah. Then you get a car and that becomes your identity.
Yeah, and then like you said, then you pimp it and it gets worse.
It's called Ahankar.
Yeah, that's a good company. Ahankar. Okay. So in other words, it's saying that within in unreal, that there's gradations of unreal. So there's some elements of unreality that are more unreal. So like you said, they're perverting off of the already perverted thing.
Yeah, if we want to skip to the next page, then it actually describes it in more detail. That concept. It's a Paramartika Vyavaharika Pratibhashika.
And this is all part of? And this
and
is all just all part of Vivarta or just the general Maya?
General Maya.
Okay, so they have so many things within each other, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so summary of text 37.
I mean, just that section on Paramartika.
Which one? Oh, just here.
Yeah, because this is the three levels that are being described.
Okay, when Jiva Goswami asks us to hypothetically consider the upadis as being real, he is referring to the Mayavad terms anavidya, empirically real, avidyaka, apparently real, and apparently real. Empirically real and apparently real. Text 30 and 38 deal with the contention that the jiva is anavidyaka, empirically real, while in text 39 refutes the avidyaka postulate. These stem from the monistic view categorizing existence, sata, in a hierarchy of three levels, from truest to falsest. So I'm sure that this comes from Buddhism.
Yeah, we get to that next
point. Okay. This sounds like Buddhism, because you're just regular, and then you start there, then you move up till you get to the... until you get to, I think, the Bodhisattva, and then that, then you just disappear. Yeah.
Then you're real unreal.
Yeah, then you're really unreal, yeah. The really unreal thing. Paramartika, absolute reality. On this level exists only non-dual Brahman, which has no form, no qualities, no variety, no activities. In short, it is nothing. An opinion shared by the Buddhists.
Yes.
In contrast to such nihilistic and atheistic, however, the Mayavadis do not admit this outright. Right? Because they can't be Mayavadis, so they can't directly say it. They instead pay lip service to God by subordinating him to the next level of reality. Vyavaharika, empirical reality. It is the public experience shared by all during day-to-day waking consciousness. And Pratibimbasika, apparent reality, experienced in dreams and illusions, like mistaking a snake for a rope in the dark. It is short-lived and private, like an illusion within an illusion. Okay. So then, but then in this, then they have the, so the jiva is dealing with this 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Vyavaharika and Pratibimbasika.
There's two schools. Some of them put them on the second, some on the third.
Who? The jiva?
The Mayavadis put the jiva on either of them.
But then where does Ishwara go then?
He's, same thing. They either put both of them together in one or the other category.
What about the first one?
That's just Brahman.
God doesn't belong there. Yeah.
Just Brahman. Because that was the whole point. Ishwara, what they're saying is that the concept that there is God as a person who comes and does all these things, then that is also an illusion, but it's a better quality illusion than the jivas are in. That's how the Mayavadis are trying to say. So it's just, he's just got a bigger pot than we got. You know? Brahman, no pot. Potless. But don't worry, he doesn't have to go to the bathroom either. So it works out.
He doesn't feel discriminated against him?
Brahman? Yeah, I don't know. He gets left out, you know. You know, but then this also gives rise to some way of doing that. Then Brahman is, like as you sometimes hear them say, is why this would happen. It's because the Brahman is for pastimes. You know, because the Brahman is then doing all these tasks. But then the point is why would Brahman want to have pastimes if there's no qualities, no nothing?
Pastimes.
Pastimes. Yes, the Brahman doesn't have a pot, so therefore, you know, you can't have
pot free.
They've made something very foolish, very complicated, so it sounds good. Because generally, who can get through it all? You know, and they themselves only stick to one of their philosophies. Okay. And the public reality of day-to-day life is less unreal than a sleeping person's dreams. Both God and the individual souls embody themselves on three basic levels, the most subtle or causal, the mental, and the physical. The causal, mental, and gross bodies of God comprise the whole universe in three phases of manifestation, like creation, maintenance, and destruction. And each jiva has its own threefold body of ego, mind, and tangible matter. Right, so here the ego, then they're taking ego before that they even exist. So for us, we understand this ego that's causing it is I'm the controller and enjoyer. So they're not going to give that up. So they're going to keep that I exist. Right? So as opposed to then the lower level where I am this body or I am, you know, from this country or I'm rich or I'm famous or like this. Mayavadi philosophers resort to these complex formulations in order to avoid admitting the distinct real existence of the Supreme Lord and the Jivas. The Mayavadi presentation can be seductive, especially for those who believe that such circuitous ideas indirectly point to a higher truth that defines the laws of logic. Right? Because they're trying to find the laws actually that nature is based on, right? Rather than it be God's will, right? Then they create something else. To a serious philosopher, however, a theory burdened with such complexity is suspect. An impartial critic should question the device of introducing within a strictly monistic philosophy a second element, a jnana, right? Because this is where the dual aspect comes, right? Because the whole point is there's only Brahman, where would ignorance come from? Because ignorance is a quality, it's a lack of knowledge, right? So that would mean if a jnana is not good, it's a lack of knowledge, that means knowledge would be better. But still, where'd the knowledge come from? And then somehow or another, knowledge is within a jnana. Mm-hmm. Right? So how do you have that it's, what would it be? You call it? It's like a double negative here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a jnana is already a negative, but there is no positive. And then within that, there's the positive and negative. Mm-hmm. So there's three aspects. Where's the origin? Where's the knowledge itself? You know?
Yes.
So that's the problem. Is they start with that, and then therefore, because they're missing one quarter of their whole thing, then they try to make it up with all these little variations. Yes.
But this knowledge is related to the chit potency. Knowledge is related. To
yes, the chit. Yeah. Which so that's the difficulties, because they're only accepting sat.
Yes. Yes.
So that means chit has to be outside of that.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if that's an illusion, then along in the same question, if you really wanted to be consistent, then Ananda is also outside
yes.
of Sat.
Yes.
So therefore, there's no such thing as Brahmananda either.
Yes.
Yes. So the concept that you're going to be happy, then that's all, you know, means why, you know what I'm saying? Otherwise, then there would be, you know, we're not saying that all the people in, you know, from past history that don't exist anymore are now all happy because they're not existing. You know, so it's just, you know, how does that?
It's also an option to be satisfied with that.
But the problem is being satisfied is a quality.
To be
a quality, and you require the mind, and you require the individual existence to actually perceive it. Yes.
On that point, they deny that there is any such thing as knowledge on that Brahman level, because then that would create a duality between the knower, the known, and the knowledge. And
yes.
So they deny all three of those categories on the top level. So there can't be chit up there because there's no knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. But then how can there be avidya?
Yeah.
You know, and then within avidya you have vidya.
Yeah,
because avidya means it's not knowledge, so then what is actual knowledge? Right? And so if they say real knowledge is knowledge of Brahman, but then on the Brahman platform there is no knowledge according to their definition.
Yeah. Yes.
So it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they're missing a part there.
Mm-hmm.
So because the point is, because that other thing is said, Brahman is knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so then you'd have to accept that there is knowledge on that platform. But then if they're rejecting it, then that's the problem. To make their concept of oneness is mundane. You know, because they're trying to, with just time and space, trying to create all these things.
Yes.
Mayavadi philosophers resort to these complex formulations in order to avoid admitting the distinct real existence of the Supreme Lord and the Jivas. The Mayavada presentation can be seductive. Oh, we already went through this, didn't we? Okay. critic should question the device of introducing within a strictly monistic philosophy a second element, ajnana, which has no real relationship with the first, and which conveniently cannot be said either to exist or to not exist. From the point of view of philosophic methodology, we can more readily satisfy the demands of experience and common sense by simply acknowledging the real individual existence of God, the living entities in the material creation. Because right there, then, without all this word juggling, you can start dealing with something. But otherwise, they have all this word juggling, but I just say it all doesn't exist there. And then their whole point is just to get to that point of nothingness, but that nothingness is supposed to make you happy. Right? But it's only supposed to make you happy because you've been unhappy by trying to enjoy the material world, which is not the nature of the soul. Right? So then you're taking that opposite element. So the happiness to be gained is still with the concept of that you there would be Brahmananda. Happiness is still within the realm of illusion, because it's just the opposite of the reaction of dealing with the material. Right? So then the difficulty comes up is that, you know, what's the whole point of their whole endeavor? You know. So it's just so much easier that the God exists, the jiva exists, the material nature exists, but the jiva is not supposed to be functioning within the material nature, it's supposed to be functioning in the spiritual nature. Then everything goes so much and so easily. You know, because the whole point of still being an illusion, being in the material world, the upadis, it still remains, but it's not because your soul, it's because the soul thinks he's. Right? Yes. So the soul is consciousness, yes, but he's not the supreme consciousness. Mm-hmm. But he thinks he's dead matter. That's his problem. Mm-hmm. As soon as he understands he's consciousness in relationship to the supreme consciousness, then everything starts to go very smoothly. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're trying to avoid that, therefore it becomes very complicated. So it's not that they're great philosophers. Right? It means if you're taking something great and applying, misusing it in a strange way, that doesn't mean it's great. You know what I'm saying? So, but since basically in the material world means everybody's misusing their intelligence, right, for their own purpose, their own happiness, therefore then those who do it in a more intellectual way are considered higher than those who do it not in the intellectual way, right? And then those two can fight over who's the, you know, the intelligent, who's the idiot, and then the businessman will be laughing on the side because, you know, he's making the money and all these guys are, you know, having to depend upon him. So, you know, so it all works out.
But then his wife leaves. Huh? But then his wife leaves because he's never home. And he's also miserable.
Yes.
With the money.
Yeah, but she leaves with the money. Depends what state. Yeah. California is 70%.
I'm not going
to
ask you.
Yeah, it is. Better to go to the next state. Yeah.
Okay. So if your wife wants to move to California, be suspicious.
Yeah, especially if you got money. Yeah. In other words, get married in Idaho.
Okay.
Wherever.
So Maharaj, this is the important thing is to discriminate between mundane and transcendental.
Yes. And that's what they're trying to do, but they're trying to ignore that the transcendental plane actually has individuality.
Yes.
Because their experience as individuality has been the cause of all their suffering. Right? Because they're individual persons, and other individual persons give them a lot of trouble.
Yes.
Right? And then, you know, so their idea is if I'm not individual, then my problems will go away. Rather than if I stop thinking I'm this kind of individual, then my problems will go away.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is that what, yes?
Why they think about their not being individual? I would rather think about them not being individual. Not to make trouble. I mean, you see, they go.
That's an interesting approach. Did you catch?
Yeah.
24th century.
We've got Charlie. Yeah. Chinese. They say, you borrow money, you no pay, I get mad. You know, you want to borrow money, I no give, you get mad. Better you get mad. This is 24th century.
But isn't it kind of what they're already thinking, even if the philosophy doesn't specifically say it? I mean,
it's unspoken, but here, why not speak it?
Why not just come out and say it?
Yeah. Be realistic.
Yeah.
Be realistic.
My unreality is more real than your unreality.
Them's fighting words.
Okay. When the same standard scriptures on which the Mayavadis impose their labyrinth of word jugglery, the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutras, and the Bhagavad Gita, are understood correctly according to the authentic interpretations of Vaishnava scholars, these scriptures clearly reveal the simple facts of reality. That's why I say they have to word juggle, because it's very obvious what it is, but they juggle it to make it come out some other way. As Sri Jiva Goswami is about to show, the Mayavadi ideas of Paricheda and Pratibimba are riddled with irresolvable inconsistencies. For example, if the absolute is axiomatically immutable and formless, right, it means, in other words, there is the fundamental that it cannot change and there's no form. How can it be divided or reflected? Yes. Right? There's nothing to reflect. There is no form, because you have to have a form to reflect. Mm-hmm. Right? And to put it into pots, it has to be able to be divided, but it's undividable. So right there, just their own philosophy is defeated by this.
Yes.
And then we haven't even brought up the point of how it's reflected or how it's... We haven't even got to there. Because then illusion, that creates already a duality. Right. So then, and if its divisions or reflections are still somehow real, how can the material illusion generated from division or reflection be dispelled merely by abstract thinking? Right? How do you just think? Right? Because here is their philosophy is I think, therefore I'm not. Right. Yeah. I don't think, therefore I am.
That's the karmis.
Yeah. On the other hand, if the variety found in the knowable world is false, and no division or reflection of Brahman factually exists, what can be the relevance of analogies to concrete instances of material division and reflection? To pots, mirrors, and the lake. Right? In other words, if this is all illusion anyway, it's false, then why would you, to give a concrete example, use the false things to explain?
Yes.
Right? Indeed, how can analogies do anything to help explain the apparent facts? Analogies are useful only in describing things that are similar. How can analogies usefully apply altogether dissimilar things? In this case, which exists and which does not? Right? Because Brahman exists, everything else does not. So then the analogy wouldn't work. There has to be something common. Vaishnavas, of course, also recognize the hierarchy of subtle and gross levels of material existence described in the Upanishads and other Vedic writings, but the Vaishnavas insist that everything is real. God is not an illusion, nor the finite souls, nor the external worlds. Srila Jiva Goswami, the most excellent representative of Vaishnava Vedanta, now proceeds to analyze some of the egregious faults of Mayavad philosophy. And egregious means?
Severe.
Severe, okay. Severe faults. Insurmountable faults.
Outstandingly bad.
Outstandingly bad. Outstandingly bad. Outstandingly bad. Now that would be a great name for some kind of, you know, like, you know, metals or punk band. You know. Outstandingly bad. They would like that. See, because it also it's important to understand here is that the natural Vaishnava Siddhanta is establishing the hierarchy, because the Veda is only describing the Lord, the living entity's material nature and their relationship, right? And this element of Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. That's what the Shastra is defining. Now, the Vaishnavas understand it as it is. And then the Mayavadis don't, the Karmis don't, so they make up philosophies to try to explain. Right? You know, Jaimini, how to be happy within this world eternally. And Shankara, how to be happy outside this world eternally. Right? Like that. So they're both dealing then with your, you know, with this, with the, you know, more complete element of the Veda. Mm-hmm. But, unfortunately, it's missed, both of them, because it's already established what it is. Right? It's not that Vaishnavas also recognize, no, that already is the definition. And Vaishnavas recognize the actual import of the Vedas, in a sense. So Vaishnavism is not another philosophy. It is the philosophy. And these others are other philosophies because they don't want to accept the Vaishnava position that I'm servant of God.
Yes.
Right? They yes. Both, the Mayavadis and the Karmis, then they're wanting to be the supreme controller and enjoyer. Right? One through knowledge, one through religious activities. Mm-hmm. Like that. Right. Or knowledge in detachment and knowledge in attachment. Right? And so then if you apply it properly, then they both will feel they'll get their results. But that's the weakness, that's the disease, that's the diseased condition of the soul, right? And these are the you know, intellectual, how you say, pious followers of the Veda, right? And then it just goes downhill from there, right? You know, very, very parabolically, you know, it drops off real fast.
All right.
Yes.
When you're speaking to someone and they say that. You know, you say something like what you just said, like this is the philosophy.
It's not that it's the philosophy, because it's not our opinion. It's just that what the fact is. You know, just like, you know, the point is I may have my opinion about this rock, but the rock is what it is.
Yeah, I understand. But what can you say to someone like...
But you don't say this to them. You just don't. You just talk about the truth. And by that association, by kirtan, by the holy name, by prasad, by service, then they'll come to understand it. Because you can only understand, because everything being Krishna, you can only understand Krishna by his grace. Right? So in other words, let's say a materialist understands a particular aspect of the material nature. Right? You know, they say they know something about economics. They're able to judge how to make money, they know what works, what doesn't work, all these things. But they followed the laws of God in connection with this, and therefore God being pleased has revealed to them, you know, through the material nature, then that aspect of economics. Right? And so as long as they follow those laws, it continues. Right? But as soon as they give up following them, that it goes away. Right? Because you don't hear of, let's say, you don't really much hear of, like in India, you hear of wealth and all that being there consistently, right? It's always been there. You know, I mean, British will talk about it as being backwards and savages and that, but if it was just backwards and savages, why didn't they set up their empire out in the Congo? You know what I'm saying? They didn't. They set it up over here because they had more wealth than their whole country put together. Right? Does that make sense? They had more wealth, more philosophy, more everything. So that's why they were here.
I guess if somebody says, what makes you convinced? Like, obviously they see that...
By experience. It means you can directly perceive it. But there's a process for that. Just like if I say, you know, you're inside and I say there's the sun and it's bright and it's warm and everything like that, and you say, you know, hogwash, right? No, you know, I haven't heard of this before. But then you say you go outside, well, that's your opinion. You understand? That's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the materialist. So it's just a matter, you go outside and you see it's true.
Yeah.
So we say you chant, you take prasad, you do these things, and you become happy, and you do it, you do.
They just don't seem convinced by that. It's like... It's
so what? Who cares? Who cares? You know what I'm saying? You want to be a lawyer. How long does that take? Right? You know what I'm saying? You know, you're talking about 20 years, you know, just as a basic thing. Then how many years you have to intern and doing papers and running and getting coffee and all that until finally, you know, you get in there. And even you're in there, then you get used by the guys that are partners in the company. Then finally you get to be a partner in the company. By the time you're actually a partner in the company, they tell you to keep your mouth shut because everything you say is stupid because you're too old. Right? Now, did that take a while or not? You know what I'm saying? How old is a president or a prime minister of a country? What about a CEO? Right? Unless they started in the garage. But, you know, understand? It's just anything takes forever. So it's like, you know, people are saying that you have to do 20 years. If you want to be a recognized middle class person in society, in Western democratic society, you have to put in 20 years of time in classroom. Otherwise, they're not really up to the standard. You know, unless you're outstanding in some other way. You didn't finish high school, but, you know, you're a billionaire. Okay, they're not going to comment. But they'll kind of think, as a person, you're a little less than standard because you don't have the knowledge and all that. So money-wise, yes, but socially, no. So 20 years, that's a long time. We're saying you try it for a few weeks, few months, and you can see.
So if somebody says it takes too long, that's when I walk away?
You just say it says everything takes too long. What doesn't take too long? You know what I'm saying? You know, so you say, okay, going down to the fast food place and getting something to eat, okay, that didn't take too long. But at the same time as then, you know, how long is the treatment later? You know what I'm saying? Because you have to remember, the heart attack didn't take too long either. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so the whole point, what does it take time? You know, so if you want just quick things, then why would you want God consciousness? Because that's something superior. You know, how long does it take? You want a diamond, you know, or you want a piece of glass. What's the difference? One is really quick, one takes a little longer. Right? Why does it take so long for the guy to propose? You know, because he's got to get the money together to buy the diamond, right? You know, if he only had to present, you know, like a rubber duck or something. You know, hey, you know, there'd be proposals happening all the time. Right? You understand? So that's the whole thing. Everything takes time. What doesn't take time? You know? Does that make sense? So, and anything that they put their effort into appropriately, they get a result. So we're saying you appropriately apply yourself in the recommended method of spiritual life, you'll get the result. The whole point is when they say like that, you just have to, you know, be able to say the same thing back.
I think they're saying, like, if they were going to try out every single religion to make sure, test which one works for them.
Yeah, but are they going to do that? Who's going to do that? How many people even think like that? It says, you're going to try it all? You know, it says, you know, are you going to try the shamans over there? What about up north, you know, the Inuits? Are you going to check out there what they're doing? You know, and then out in Borneo, there's guys out there, you know, with the blowguns and stuff. They're also doing some. Like that, you know, is that what you're going to do? You know, and then Christians? I mean, there's two hundred, over 200 forms of Catholicism. You know, then there's the Protestants, right? Then you got the East Orthodox, then you have the Oriental, like that. You're talking about who knows how much, 400 or 500 kinds of Christianity. You're going to try them all? You know? Like that. Then you have, at least the Jews, it's a little bit more narrow than that. You know, there's only a few branches of that.
13,
right. Yeah, so that's easier. Now, and they've been at it for 5,000 years. Now, that means there's some brains. They've cut it down, right? You know, it's not like these others that they keep going off and, you know, like that. You know? In Islam...
Limited in numbers.
You know, and so, you know, they're willing to put in the time, right? So it's a lifestyle, right? You know, it's like that. Then Muslims, I don't know how many branches there are in them. But basically, there's two main branches. You know, they kill each other over that. You know, because why are there two main branches? Because it started because one brother or one cousin killed the other one, and so then those are the two branches. So you carry on. It's like the Hatfields and McCoys, right? You know, how many kinds of hillbillies are? Two, right? Hatfields, McCoys, right? You know, like that. So that's, you know, then Buddhism, there's a few branches. You know, most everyone, some of the Christians, they're the ones that can't figure it out. So is that what they're going to do? So does that make sense? It means, the point is when they say these stuff, you just say it back. You know what I'm saying? You know, or what do you mean? Oh, it takes too long. What do you mean by long? What does long mean? You know. If you're talking about working out the overall problem in life. You know. How long is a mortgage? Okay, how many years?
20. Minimum 15.
Yeah, minimum 15, mostly 20, but some do 30. Okay, now that's a long time. So now they're willing to own a house to take 15 to 30 years.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's just a place to live. Now, what are you going to do in that? So now, your lifestyle, you, your personal, why you wouldn't want to put in the time? So in other words, they don't care about themselves? Is that the point? You only care about the external? What about you? You know? So if it's all about the clothes and that, I said, why be involved in something like that? Why not be involved in a society that cares about you? Right? That makes sense? You know, then the alternatives there are a little freaky. So, what's that kind of weirdo area in Paris where all the bohemians are? You know, that kind of out of the way. You know.
Peaceful.
Yeah, you can go there, right? You know, like that. You know, like that. I think Moulin Rouge was there. You know, so it's popular. But, you know, there they just don't really care. So it's just, it can work. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know. But, you know, this is one way to deal with it. You know, others have other methods. That's generally the way we deal with it. Because the point is, they're going to speak something, then, you know, have some meaning to what they say. Yeah. Otherwise, they just talk as if it's their right. But then if it's their right to make comments about what you say, oh, well, that's just an opinion. But that's an opinion that you say it's an opinion. You know what I'm saying? It's like you just throw it back in the face. And the system works. Right? Despite what people may think about it. But people with brains, they're the ones that respond to this. People without brains generally... I mean, they have no brains, they respond also. Because they figure out you're smarter than them. So ones in the middle who aren't smart, who think they're smart, they have a problem with this. Okay.
So now it is why we are here. Because we have some brain.
Yes, some brain, yes. Yes.
I realize that studying this book, you know, it means to fight against impersonalism is mainly on ourselves first.
Yes. It means if we're not attracted by the things, then it's very easy to understand. You know, it's just like, let us say you're watching some people and they're having a problem, right? They're arguing or they have disagreement. Yes. But from your perspective, it's very straightforward. It's very simple. Yes. Why? Because you don't have a detachment to the attachment that they have.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And so that's the whole point. If you don't have an attachment to this, then it's very easy. Because you notice that there's big discussion, but the acharyas sum it up and they don't even bother even with the lower levels of the discussion. Their point is that if Brahman is unchanging, right, and has no qualities, then how can there be, there can't be a second entity. So the question of ajnana doesn't even arise. So therefore all the theories that come based on ajnana can't exist if you're talking about Brahman. Right?
Yes.
Because they all depend upon the, you know, being able to be divided or being these qualities of ignorance. Mm-hmm. So where does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Unchanging, undividable. You just stick them to their philosophy. Then they can't do it. It's just like Prabhupada when he's talking to that one Christian gentleman. He just stick to thou shalt not kill. Yes. Just, stick to that. Yes. You know, you're killing. So then how is this Christian? You know? That's the point. You know, if it's God's creatures, then, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. You just stick to those basic things, and then you don't have to get, because when you get into the other, then that's where they spend their time.
Yes, yes.
So they're quite good in there, but when you deal on this side, that the actual logic of the basis of their philosophy, then that's, they don't, you know, they have nothing to say. They'll only say, well, it's inconceivable, it's unexplained. But the point is no, we're dealing with absolute truth. It is explainable. And if it's unexplainable, that means knowledge has no value. So why would you say that by having knowledge, you will bring yourself back to that original absolute position? Because how can something unabsolute bring you to the absolute black? You know, it's like saying by not eating, I'll become full. You know, it's like...
I think, therefore, I'm not.
I think, therefore, I'm not. Yes. Yeah, so. Yeah, I'm just wondering what that guy would be looking like. No? Okay, does that make sense? So, therefore, as bringing around this, just here we're saying, of course, also recognize, but the point is no, this is the philosophy. This is the facts. You know, it's just like that. Jiva Goswami is the most excellent representative. Yeah, okay. It's not that the Vaishnavas insist, the point is, it is real. Right, that's the point. So we're only insisting because people say it's not, because that's the fact. Yes. It's not that it's an opinion, right?
Yes.
Like that. So recognizing and insisting are not opinions, right? God is not an illusion, nor the finite souls, nor the eternal world. External world, excuse me. Srila Jiva Goswami, the most excellent representative of Vaishnava Vedanta, now proceeds to analyze some of the...
Egregious.
They could have used a J, you know. If they put EGRIJ, then you could say it. That was Mark Twain's complaint, is they have no imagination.
Yeah.
You know, they make it sound like, no, but it's always been like this. No, it's only been like this for about 100 years, 150 years that they make these spellings. But before that, do anything you want.
That's why it's so great when Bengalis, they spell English. I mean,
yeah. Oh, no,
that's really far out.
I think it was in Yeah, in London I saw a handwritten letter by the third wife of Henry. Elizabeth's mother. Oh, well, whatever. She was one of the big ones. Like that, no. Then, but in handwriting and all that, where you use I, she always used Y's.
Oh.
Right? Because you know, it's much more easy, and it's so easy to read. That's the far out thing.
They still do that. They spell tire, T-Y-R.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, like because technically, if you wanted to be, you wanted to do it in the other one, I, but it's only, but it's A-I,
yeah.
I-E.
Yeah.
You know, so then it would be T-A-I-R-E. But then you don't say the E, you know, so it should just be T-A-I-R.
That's good. That's good.
Entire. But it's easier if you do T-Y-R, you know, yeah, like that. Then that would take it a little too far north for the general taste.
I-E-Y-E.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, summary of text 37. Srila Jiva Goswami, following in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footsteps, contends that Sri Vyasa's experience in trance contradicts both of these Mayavad doctrines, Pratibimba and Parichedavad. This contradiction is evident from the analysis Jiva Goswami has already presented. But in the upcoming Anuchetas, he will further submit these theories to analysis and point out their specific logical defects. First, he considers whether or not the upadis of Brahman are real or unreal. Text 37. Considering the matter more deeply. Oh, so there's only one. There's not 37.1, 2, 3.
Only one for this section.
Okay.
For the next 5 or 6 minutes.
Considering the matter more deeply, suppose these upadis are not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. Footnote 10. Okay. When Jiva asks us to hypothetically consider the upadis as being real, he's referring to the Mayavadi's term anavidyaka, empirically real, and avidyaka, apparently real. Text 37-38 deal with the connection that the Jiva is anavidyaka, while text 39 refutes the avidyaka postulate. These stem from the monistic view of categorizing existence, sata, in a hierarchy of three levels, from truest to falsest. Paramartika, absolute reality. On this level exists only non-dual Brahman, which has no form, no qualities, no variety, no activities. In short, it is nothing, an opinion shared by the Buddhists. In contrast to such nihilistic and atheistic, views. Okay. However, or nihilisticism, or however, the Mayavadis do not admit this outright. They insist they instead pay lip service to God by subordinating him to the next level of reality. Vyavaharika, empirical reality, is the public experience shared by all during day-to-day waking consciousness. So in here you'd get the living entity and you'd get Ishwara. Right? Then, pratibhashika, apparent reality, experienced in dreams and illusions, like mistaking a snake for a rope in the dark. It is short-lived and private, like an illusion within an illusion. In Drig Drishya Viveka 20, Shankaracharya writes, because this Drig Drishya Viveka, objects in the material world have 5 characteristics. Existence, asti, perceivability, bhati, attractiveness, priyam, form, rupa, and name, nama. Of these, the first 3 belong to Brahman and the last 2 to the world. Existence, asti, perceivability, bhati, and attractiveness, priyam. So that's interesting because he's giving some qualities, attractiveness and perceivability. But form, rupa, and nama, he says these are of the world, yes. Oh, there's something else, because somebody else also gave. All qualities of substance, that was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Existence, astitva, okay, so it's just putting it into the nature of, okay. then distinctness, vishesha. Okay, that would be the form. Then kriya, oh, and prayojana. Okay, so he's not... he's not applying it here, this sambandhi abhideya prayojana. Okay, so basically you're taking... Okay, because attractiveness would also be prajumna. Mm-hmm. Perceivability is sankarshan, otherwise how do you know it exists? Mm-hmm. So he's giving five aspects of sambandha. Then you have the application of kriya and its prayojana, what it can get, because everything has like that.
Yeah. We have nama, rupa, guna, and lila, name, form, pastime, and quality. Similar to that. They just put all the qualities together, or they divide guna into those three.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about lila.
If everything is illusion, what are we talking about?
These are just the definitions within illusion.
Yeah.
Those are worldly ones and those.
Well, he's saying that these first three belong to Brahman and the last two to the world. But now, does that element of Brahman here, he's meaning the Brahman meaning the undifferent, the Paramartika, or is he meaning that of the Vyavaharika where it is the jnana aspect as opposed to the ajnana aspect?
Yeah, from the next sentence, he says that they belong to the Vyavaharika. How Brahman reflects.
Okay, so then you get these five.
Yeah.
Okay, so he says the first thing, so at least he's giving that the Lord is attractive and perceivable. According to Shankara, the first three are Brahman itself as perceived in empirical reality. Form and name, on the other hand, are products of Maya, and thus constitute the lower two forms of reality, Pratibhashika and Vyavaharika. They, along with the material world, cease to exist when one becomes Brahman realized, just as a dream ceases when one's awake. But then the only problem is if he's saying, is that those who are within, so existence, astika, yeah. Perceivability, but how do you perceive if there's no senses?
Yeah.
You only consciousness, but the consciousness perceives through senses. Yeah. It's just whether they're spiritual and material. And then attractiveness, that means then there's something that you're attracted to, so you have to be a separate entity. Mm-hmm. So then here, even Shankara is, again, bewildering his already bewildered
shooting himself in the foot
Mayavadis. Well, no, he's leaving holes in their philosophy, then, you know.
Yeah. Nice.
Right. In other words, he has handed them a piece of Emmental. Emmental?
Cheese?
Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Full of holes. Yeah. That's but actually, that would be an insult to the Emmental cheese. Yes. Not to the Maya.
No, no.
That's actually cheese. A step that's up. Right?
Exactly. Good cheese.
Yeah. Okay. That would do it. Okay. They could not. Okay. So this is considering matter more deeply, the matter. Suppose these upadis are not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. They could not possibly subject Brahman to division. Because he's undividable, right? Since Brahman never undergoes change, right? Because by the nature of it, just saying that illusion is there, it has some substance, how could you divide? Because if it has no substance, it can't have any effect. Illusion doesn't have an effect, right?
Yes.
You know, like that. Brahman also cannot be subjected to reflection, since what is devoid of qualities extends everywhere and has no parts, cannot have any relationship with upadis, be distinguished into original object and reflection, or even be visible. Right? Because if you're going to reflect it, you have to have space. You have to have something where it's over here and that's over there.
Yeah.
But if Brahman is everywhere, where's the scope for having a possibility of reflecting it?
Yeah.
Yes. Right? A reflection of the sky can never be seen, but only a reflection of a certain quantity of light in a portion of the sky, a portion defined by some upadi, some imaginary feature. After all, the sky itself is invisible. Right. So it's not even, it can't be a reflection. Mm-hmm. So if it's not, then what is it? Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives an extended commentary to this Anucheda. Unfortunately, in the next 30 seconds, we won't be able to read this. we'll just open with the first sentence. Okay. This Anucheda explains why the theory is illogical. Sums it up, okay? And then we'll get into that next class.
Thursday.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The Prabhupada ki jai. Another interesting thing about the smoke, at least in the winter, besides the mosquitoes, is that when there's smoke in the air, it keeps the air warm.
Yes,
you don't think it's cold. Like the sadhus, when they get a piece of wood, they don't make a fire. They make smoke. Because then the piece of wood will last longer. So, you know, like a kumbh mela or something, they just get one big long log and they burn that through the whole kumbh mela. They just started at one end, and then, you know, like here, if it gets too much, they put it down and it just smokes. And so, and because smoke is heavy, it sits low. Because heat goes up, but smoke sits down. And so then they're on the ground, and the smoke's around them on the ground, and so they're warm.
Nice.
You know, so it's far out. So, secondary benefit from the smoke.